Welcome to Tales of a Per Entrepreneur with your host, Dr. Biz, aka Jamie Reeves.
Welcome to Tales of a Per Entrepreneur, a podcast that tells the stories of ordinary people doing extraordinary things. And if you are a business owner and parent, I salute you, as they are two of the hardest things you can do, and you are doing both together. I'm your host, Jamie Reeves, aka Dr. Biz, and on today's episode are two guests that know a thing or two about juggling being a parent and running a business. Katie Lith and Roxy Bond are the duo behind the revolution in the wedding industry. With a combined 13 years of deep-rooted experience, they stand as educators and coaches, transforming struggling small businesses into flourishing enterprises with sustainable, repeatable systems that navigate the lonely world of running a business and ensure clients and bookings. Their journey with the Wedding Business Hub started in 2009 when they wanted to create a space for businesses in the wedding industry to come together and share knowledge and experiences, something hugely needed inside our industry at the time. They rapidly grew the business, hosting events and communities of like-minded business owners across the world. They love to coach and support business owners to get to their next level, all whilst enjoying their business and without the burnout. They are both parents to children with additional needs, and so Katie and Roxy intimately comprehend the delicate juggle of running a business while navigating the demands of parenthood. With five children between them, they've picked up a thing or two about running a business, running a home alongside the demands of running a business. I think I got that bit right. Anyway, fueled by a passion for empowering wedding professionals, they share their wealth of knowledge to shatter barriers and pave the way for success. So ladies and gents, please welcome to the pod, Katie Lith and Roxy Bond.
Woo! Wow.
I think I got my tongue around all of that. That's some intro, isn't it? How are you doing, ladies?
Fine, thank you.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to go straight into my first question.
Amazing.
Why are you in business? To quote a TV program from my childhood, why don't you just go and do something less boring instead?
Good question. Why are we in business? I think for me, especially the older that I've gotten, the more being in business, I mean, I've run businesses now since I was 21. Mm-hmm. Long portion of my life. I would be unemployable. I am definitely the type of person that would go into anywhere and be like, why are we doing it this way? This needs changing. Like, I can up your productivity here. I would absolutely 100% be unemployable. What I've always loved about running businesses is two things, really. The flexibility, obviously, around having a young family and being able to be there to pick up from school rooms and have that flexibility over holiday time and things like that. But secondly, as well, the possibilities to be able to make as much money as, you know, I want to be able to be making. I'm not, you know, relying on anybody else to kind of set what, you know, wage I'm on or telling me when I'm going to have a promotion or not have a promotion. And I think that's amazing about being in business in general, that, you know, the possibilities are just endless. And yeah, that's me anyway.
Okay, so for me, I kind of, you know, exactly what Katie said there. And I see it in myself all the time when I'm like out and about and I'm like in shops or looking over someone else's business. I'm thinking, okay, there's better ways we can be doing things here. Like, I just can't help it. It's just in me to kind of, to see what others don't see. And also as well, work-life balance for me, massively. Having a child, exactly like you said, with additional needs, a lot of extra phone calls from school, having to, you know, appointments, having to be there when if I was working a full-time job and not my own boss, yeah, it just would not be feasible. And I have done it, and that equals for me burnout, and I'm not about that. I like having that a little bit more flexibility and control, I suppose.
So how did you ladies get together? What did you start a business together, or have you just known each other from different businesses and then pulled your talents?
So Katie, I actually met Katie, she was my boss.
Okay. So Roxy came in to work with me. I had a bridal shop, that's where we started in the wedding industry, had a bridal shop, and Roxy came to kind of work with me on kind of day one, really. So day one of the shop, I'd run my business from home for a couple of years and then decided that we were going to move into premises, and Roxy came to work for me on kind of day one. And very early on, like, I love business, and you could put me in any business and I would kind of be fine about it, because business is business, and I just love business. And very quickly, when Roxy came to work with me, I think you started off working one day a week, didn't you?
It was literally a Saturday. I think I might have even not been a Saturday girl. I think I was a Sunday girl.
Yeah, Sundays. You used to come and answer the phone for me on a Sunday and put people in. And within 3 months, Roxy was full-time. And then within kind of 6 odd months, you were kind of managing a team. For me, it was always about building the business up and being as behind the scenes as I could be. So being kind of managing from afar. So Roxy came to work for me. We stayed in that business for about 6 years. And then, yes, we had the idea for the Wedding Business Hub, just to solve a problem that we were facing, really. People were networking inside of our shop, taking us away from our clients and customers. Also asking us as well how we were growing so quickly, how were we getting PR, how were we on being invited on very exciting TV shows. So people were kind of taking us away from work a little bit. And I was like, we need a space where we can just go once a month and, you know, chat amongst each other, and then thank you very much, so we'll see you next month. And I came into work and I was like, right, I've got an idea, Roxy. And very quickly, it was actually our business birthday this month.
Oh,
very quickly. We always forget to celebrate, don't we? We forget to celebrate every year. Mm-hmm.
Yes, we do.
Very quickly, it was becoming full-time, a full-time entity, and very needed inside the wedding industry. So it grew to about 2,000 members in 5 days. People were asking for events very quickly. And within sort of 3 months, we were taking the same revenue-wise as we were taking inside the shop, without any of the costs of stock and rent and rates and staff and all of that sort of stuff. So we got to a kind of a level, and also personally for me as well, I needed to be home more with my children. I was going through a divorce. My childcare options weren't there anymore. I was having to pull back on the hours I was working in the shop. And the kind of decision came for us, the business started in the February, in the May, so quite early on, that this was going to be much bigger than we can handle alongside the shop. So it came to the decision that we were going to walk away from the bridal business and focus our efforts on the wedding business full time.
And I think for me at that point, I was employed at this point by Katie. So I went from employment into taking that massive leap that quite a lot of us have to do, of going into self-employment and then not being, you know, that wage each month. So it was like, okay, but I actually love it. I've always loved it. I've always loved it. And I just wanted to touch on a point, like rewind to when me and Katie met. Like, previous to that, I literally was a young stay-at-home mum. I had zero confidence, you know, and I really had to pull myself out of myself to take that leap into any sort of job. And Katie believed in me. And I am ever, forever grateful for that opportunity. So thank you.
There's one, well, 2 points I want to kind of touch on there, if I can, is that mindset must have played an incredible role for both of you. For you, Roxy, taking that leap from employment into being self-employed and being a co-owner of a business.
Yeah.
And Katie, with everything that you had going on at the time, starting the Wedding Hub, your divorce, managing your kids, managing the shop. So talk to me about how mindset played a role in keeping you both sane and keeping that belief level up. Because I think that, for me, self-belief has always been the most important thing that you can do for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about the role mindset played for both of you ladies.
Where do we start? I think for me, seeing that momentum of what we'd managed to already achieve in such a short space of time with the Wedding Business Hub when we first launched it, that just fueled my motivation, my self-belief. You know, and I really enjoyed helping people and supporting people in the industry, because we knew firsthand how it was to feel lonely and not have a place to go. So actually, I don't know, it was never really, I didn't really find it that difficult.
I think youth played a bit of a part in it.
Yeah, probably actually, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think about this quite a lot actually. because I think, God, how do we do it? We were practically running two businesses. I was going through a really rocky divorce at the time. No childcare at home. My son was being diagnosed.
Same. We had all that going on as well.
I think Roxy was fighting for a school place at the time. And I don't think there was any shadow of a doubt in our mind that it was going to be successful. And I don't know if we're still like that. I think there is much to be said about youth. But there was no shadow in our doubt. We were just like, both feet in, we'll do whatever it takes, and let's just smash this out of the park. And, yeah, that's what we did. And I do often quite think, gosh, where did our energy come from? Mm-hmm. Because I am exhausted now. But I think definitely fueled by the success of the first business that we had. We built. I built that business up to multi-six figures in a couple of years. I ran it with, we had five or six staff members at the time. We were, we had some amazing opportunities in that business, and I think that really drived us. And also, it was really needed in the industry. So we were constantly being asked, like at wedding fairs and everywhere that we went, why are you getting so many views on your social media? Like, why are you girls are being invited on all these amazing things? And so I knew that people needed the information that we had in our minds, and we were giving it away for free anyway. So I was like, right, let's just, take this and
let's harness this opportunity. Yeah, we just went in 2 feet, didn't we?
I think mindset is a bit like a diet, though. And I think, sometimes you can fall off the wagon with it a little bit, and you have to kind of remind yourself to get back into that zone. Because, yes, it's really important to believe in yourself and, have conviction in what you're doing, but it's not natural to be motivated 100% of the time. It's not natural to be, have that fuel for a new business 100% of the time. You can run, and we see this quite a lot actually with small businesses, that they run out of the tracks with no plan, and they have success for a period of time, but then things start to catch up with you. You need to put systems in place, you need to put things underneath you, otherwise you will fall and crumble. And I say this with experience, we always giggle and have a laugh. Like, we went from such a tiny bridal shop where we would literally order everything from our mind, because we'd see maybe 3 or 4 clients a week. We'd be able to remember.
No order forms, no systems, nothing.
And there wasn't the space to go and ask anybody for this. So there wasn't any, unless we had thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds. And what small business does when they're in that first couple of years, like, we didn't have the thousands and thousands of pounds to invest in coaches and mentors. So we learned everything by making mistakes, making more mistakes, looking at what we were doing. Reading as much information as we could read, chatting to as many people as we could chat to, and putting that into our business and learning from it. We fell into all the traps of everything, but I think a willingness to learn alongside having a mindset. I'm quite lucky because I have quite a positive mindset anyway, and I don't really let a lot of things get me down for too long.
Yeah.
And what's nice is there's two of us as well. So when I'm having a bad day, Roxy can pick me up, and vice versa as well. And also motivation. Some of the time I'm not feeling it, some of the time she's not feeling it, and we're both like, well, get on with it.
Pep talk time.
The thing is, though, that the human mind is created to navigate us away from negative experiences. Mm-hmm. So we've still got that caveman mentality where we think we're going to be eaten by a saber-toothed tiger. So we're naturally there trying to protect ourselves. So it's not always going to be sort of all glitter and unicorns and making sure that everything's kind of all happy clappings. Sometimes you are going to feel that little bit down, and the way that you two bounce off each other is great. But how would you kind of, for a solopreneur, how would you help them navigate those down days with the experience of time that you've got from obviously a crazy period of your life? When you look back at that, you said, how did we have the energy? So how would you navigate one of your clients to keep going when the shiny new object is not so much of a shiny new object anymore?
I think one of the most important things is to surround yourself with like-minded people. I think a lot of businesses, especially in this industry, because we're a funny old industry, really, the wedding industry. And I know you come from a wedding industry background as well, Jamie.
Yeah.
So, as in, the barriers to entry is really low. So, you know, you can pick up a camera and, yes, you may have an amazing talent, but there's no kind of formal qualifications there in terms of getting into the industry, you know, like maybe you would in different industries. But what we kind of found, and we definitely still experience it, is the people around you, when you go self-employed, you're rubbing against the grain, and the people around you can sometimes really not get it, and everybody wants to put their 2 pence in. So I was told things like, oh, you know, 80 pence of every pound you earn is going to go to the tax man, which is absolute rubbish. And, you know, people that just don't know any different, giving you all sorts of rubbish advice, or, you know, oh, well, what will you do if it fails? Because it goes against the grain. And exactly what you said there, like, our mind is there to keep us safe. Our friends and family are there to do that as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes they can give you quite unhelpful advice. And this was one of the fueling reasons why we wanted to set up the Wedding Business Hub, to give people the space to surround themselves with like-minded people, but also to be able to go and ask those questions. What did you do when you faced this situation? How did you, you know, find this client or that client? Or to navigate those tricky things, but also to share wins. And absolutely, still, I've been in business now for a really long time. Absolutely, I still have to be my own champion, because yes, the people around me will always say, well done, but they absolutely don't get it. Like, for every pound that we make, or every time we put our prices up and we get a client, we have made that happen by something we have done, by the copy we have written. We don't have a team of 20, 30 people inside of our business creating opportunities for us. We're going out and creating those opportunities for ourselves. And still, the people around me don't really get, like, how, you know, how actually, I don't want to say they don't get how amazing it is, because I'm sure that they do,
yeah.
But we wanted to...
But it is incredible, like, what you've just said there, like, everything is coming from us. I totally, like, my husband is employed, and he loves me, I love him, but oh my God... Sometimes I could literally throttle him, because I'll be like, oh my God, like, we've made this many sales. And once he said to me, crack on, right? and I just thought, you know what? You don't get it, do you? Mm. And that's okay, but it is...
It's disheartening.
Exactly what you said, Katie, and I was going to say the same thing, Jamie, because you called it solopreneur. Like, you should not feel alone. Surround yourself with a group of people that are going to be your cheerleaders when it's going well, that you can turn to when it's not going so well. That is so important. It is 100%. It's actually vital. It's completely vital.
We have a phrase that says, like, business and drinking should never be done alone. And this is, like, what it is. You know, find your people, find your tribe. You know, whether it be online, we started with, like, hundreds of online communities for wedding professionals in local networks, to be able to kind of network together, which was so important during the pandemic as well, when no one could get out and, you know, talk about what was going on and navigate that space. But yeah, put yourself out there and find the people that are going to cheerlead for you, and also pull you out of those dark moments and pull you out of those and remind you what you're doing it for. The other thing that we would say, just quickly on that, would be to know where you're headed as well. So, you know, goal set, vision board, however it works for you. Just know what are you doing this for? Because, you know, and it has to be away from the money, because the money doesn't motivate you, actually. Like, it doesn't motivate you. And when the money stops coming, or it becomes a little bit more difficult to get that client, or, you know, to make the sale, if your only motivation is money, it disappears at that point. So you have to find something that motivates you, whether that's your family, whether that's experiences that you want in your life, whether it's something from your childhood or a teacher that told you that you would never make it in life, whatever it is, find that motivation, because that is what is going to keep you going on the days where the customers aren't coming in, it's, you know, the no one's buying your offer. Because, and I know that we see this a lot on Instagram, because no one's talking about the times where it doesn't go right. And this is why you need to have that motivating factor underneath, because it doesn't go right all of the time.
Well, let's talk about a couple of things there. Firstly, the hanging around your tribe. Jim Rohn once said you are the average of the five people that you hang around the most. And I believe that so much. And like you say, online communities can be a really easy way if you're just starting up. We have one with Tales of a Pair Entrepreneur called Friends of the Show. It's a free Facebook group. So if people want to join in with that, they can. I guess you ladies have the same with the Wen Industry Hub. You've got your own tribe. Yes. People can join with that. So we'll put that in the show notes for people as well. And the other thing that you mentioned that I'm really big on is goal setting, and having, it's like an internal GPS, isn't it? So you would never go on a long journey of an hour or so, more so, without putting in the coordinates where you want to go, and then your GPS helps update. I believe that with your 3-year vision, going into your 1-year vision, going into your 90-day goals, monthly goals, and then your weekly tasks. And then I even have it daily. So for me, that's a really important way of doing it. And then the other thing that I loved what you talked about in that was noting down your wins. Do you do that on a daily basis or do you do that weekly? How does that work for you?
No. Every single win now, actually, for me, I'm like, woo!
We're very good at celebrating. And this came from Bridal Shop Culture, because we were a team of young women, and I made a point about that actually. I'm very passionate about getting women back into work after they've had children. Like, it fumes me actually that we're in 2024 and the barrier for women to get back into work is so high. And we're still making this choice between having babies or careers. So we were a team of really young girls, and every win we would have, we'd have like a little sales dance, a little sales cheer, or we'd go for a cheeky Nando's or whatever it was. And we used to always do this other thing. So we'd go to wedding fairs quite regularly, and we'd probably turn up to the same ones every 6 months, every 12 months. And before we'd go into the wedding fair, we'd have like 2 minutes where everyone would say all the things they'd achieved in their life, in their business, in our business, in their life, personally, whatever it was, in the period since the last time we've been there. So whether it would been one of the girls learned to drive, Roxy got married, other thing, you know, whatever it was. And we just celebrate as a team, and we still do this. I'm really good at giving myself like a woo, cheers, well done. And I think it comes from the fact that you have to as a business owner, because the people around you aren't doing it.
So aren't we? We can be guilty of being so destination obsessed, right? That we've got this goal and we want to get to a certain point. But then when we get there, let's put another goal there without even considering all of that hard work and all of the, you know, what it's taken to get to that point. So everybody out there, listen to them. Just celebrate your goals, however big, however small. Write them down on like a spreadsheet. So then the times when you're feeling a bit crappy or it's not going so well, go and have a look back at all the amazing things that you have done. Like, I love it. I literally love it.
We encourage our clients to do it as well, don't we? And we actually tell them off a little bit if they don't. We're like, we'll send them little gifts through the post. Like if they come and say, oh, you know, I've smashed this out this week, or even if something personally is going on, because it's so important to celebrate the wins. And they're now in a really good space where they know that if they tell us they've done something good, we're expecting to see the photographic evidence of them having like a glass of wine or going to the
cinema. Going out for a little bit of a meal.
Or whatever it is, because we're like, no, like you need to shout about it, put it out into the universe that you want more of this, please. And, you know, just revel in your moment. And what Roxy there said about, we're very focused about putting this destination in. It's not always about the destination, but actually it's about all of the steps that get you there.
Yeah.
And actually all of the steps that get you there are worth their own wins. And it's a culture that we do celebrate in our groups. We have like a win day on a Friday where we encourage people to tell us whether it is something as simple as, you know, I did the ironing this week. On
or the kids are off and I managed to get some hours done in my business, whatever it is.
Like small wins, big wins, you've got to be your own cheerleader.
Yeah, 100%. I've got a journal that every night I put at least three wins in.
Oh, do you do it daily? I love that, yeah.
And sometimes it can be just as little as I had a steak tea. I went and got myself just something to kind of celebrate. Sometimes it's bigger and sometimes it's smaller. And I know that a couple of weeks ago I went for a hearing test because after 32 years in the music industry, my ears were a little bit shot. Who'd have thought? So I was feeling a bit down and kind of like I'm approaching 50 in a couple of years. So I was feeling proper old and sorry for myself. But at the end of that day, I still had my three wins that I put down. And it didn't matter how small that was. And I think that's so important when you're doing stuff on your own. If you need to be your own cheerleader, having that journal of wins that I can look back and I can kind of go, right, these are the magic moments that I've had already this year. Mm-hmm. And that's really, really cool.
And it fuels self-confidence and it fuels that self-belief in you to kind of keep going and move forward. We call it a superstar list. So, you know, having things on there and we do this exercise with our clients quite a lot and we get them to write even as far back as passing my driving test or, you know, I've got A levels or a degree in this, you know, what do I know to be true? And this is something that people can practice at home. They can make a list of what do they know is true about themselves. So on the days where they don't get that client or they get a yes from somebody and then they get ghosted, which has happened to us this week. And my word, it's like a kick where you think, oh yeah, I've got the sale, worked really hard for that. And then it doesn't work out. You can go back to this list, you can have a look, you can remind yourself that you're a freaking awesome person and keep on going. And this is a practice that we've done. This year I've journaled more than I've ever journaled in my life, actually. And I really love it. I find it really cathartic. And pen to paper as well. I think there's something really cathartic about pen to paper because right now we're like very digital focused. But nobody learnt to write on a keyboard. And I think we engage a different part of our brain when we put pen to paper and we sit and we write and we quite often say to our coaching clients when we're talking about goal setting or we're talking about, you know, what are our OKRs and things that we want to focus on is just start writing and it will come to you. And it's amazing actually that works. So just put anything down for now. And we give them like 10 minutes where we just sit in silence and they're scribbling away pages and pages of notes. And they think, you know, they start that with not even a thought in their mind. And I do believe it's that, you know, connection between learning to write and that part of that brain that we're not tapping into when we're sat in front of computers all day long.
Sorry if you just saw me like roll off screen for a moment there. My son's like, Mom, where are you? I've locked the door so you can't get in.
This is Tales of a Parentrepreneur, so that's...
Exactly.
So that hot pen technique that you were talking about there, I think can be so valuable where you just kind of stop, put some kind of like Ibiza chill out music on in the background very lightly and then just kind of write, my life in 3 years will be like this and dada, and I've done all these amazing things. And I think that can be a really easy way of programming your own GPS to get things started. So you were talking about a little bit about women getting back into work. So I know the female listeners, if I don't ask you the questions about this, how would you solve that problem then? Do you think it's because we're working in offices too much and now COVID stopped, everybody's got to go back into the workplace, which is obviously needed for some businesses, but it's not needed for a lot of businesses. My team will work from home. We've got Laura who's off on maternity at the moment and hopefully we'll make it easy for her to come back into the workplace. Well, I say workplace, she'll be able to kind of switch her keyboard back on and be able to hopefully juggle being a mum and being a part of our business. So how do you think business owners can help?
I'm not sure how, and if it's really at a local level, I think it more needs to be kind of national level. Childcare needs to be way more affordable for people. Mm-hmm. And women shouldn't really have to make that choice between, you know, having a career and, let's face it, pension. Like, all we're hearing about is how people don't have enough money to live when they're getting older. We're in an ageing population. We're living for longer now. And society isn't set up the way it was years and years ago. It's not set up in the way that it was, that women typically stay at home and their husbands can manage the family on the, you know, house prices were lower, food was lower. The cost of living now is exceptionally high. And also women socially, and this is fair enough because, you know, you can't ask for one side of the coin and not the other. Women are now expected to contribute like up to 50%, sometimes 50%, sometimes more to their family household, whether that be work, bills, whatever it is. Childcare needs to be way more affordable, if not free, and actually subsidised by the fact that more women will be paying tax, more women will be put into that higher tax bracket, for sure. Me and Roxy fronted a Women Supporting Women campaign for the Prince's Trust, gosh, probably 6-7 years ago now. Yeah. This is how long we've been bashing on about this. And unfortunately, like, things have not changed. For us, 100%, even as recent as last year, had I not been working for myself, I literally could not work anywhere else. My son has very high additional needs. He doesn't go to school at the moment because of his health. And he hasn't been in school now for, God, coming on 15, 16 months. We've only just started to have a tutor in the house, but the tutor needs to be supervised. I need to be here. If I had a full-time job, and there are thousands of families going through similar situations, have children with additional needs at home or children who don't fit into the education system that have had to leave their jobs because they can't juggle with the 300 phone calls from schools telling them to come and pick up their child, or the medical appointments, or, you know, it's taken 6, 9, 10, 12 months for their child to get into a school. And that needs to be changed. So two things need to be massively changed in this country. First of all, childcare needs to be subsidised and way more affordable. And the policy that came out about, you know, I think this year it was subsidised a little bit more for childcare vouchers, but the childcare providers have come out and said it doesn't cover the cost, so they can't offer the spaces. You know, if the government are going to pay £3 an hour for, you know, somebody to go to nursery, and it doesn't cover the staff, and it doesn't cover the, you know, insurance of the building or anything like that.
They're putting minimum wage up to £11 an hour in April, but they're offering £3 an hour.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous. It doesn't work. It forces skilled women outside of the workplace. And then, you know, sorry to take this off on a tangent, and then we get back into the workplace, and then menopause hits. And then, you know, this has only been talked about for the last sort of however many years, in terms of, you know, we get back into the workplace, we start to build up our careers, and then, you know, we experience hot sweats, and some women experience depression and poor sleep and poor cognitive function. And yeah, so I'm happy to see it, but we need to see more women in cabinet positions in Parliament, for sure. And secondly, as well, the education in this country needs overhauling. Even as three entrepreneurs sitting here, we probably haven't followed the path that kind of education sets out for us, like school, university. and, you know, there's that quote, you know, I think it was Einstein, it's like, you can't judge a fish on its ability to climb a tree. Because, you know, and we both look at our children. Roxy's got a son with similar additional needs to my son. And they are amazing human beings. Like, their brains are absolutely amazing. Roxy's son is really good, hands-on. He could rebuild a computer. He could put a car together. Fix
so smart. Car.
Really
so smart.
Smart. But academically, you put him in a classroom and he can't cope. And my son, very similar. He has incredibly high anxiety, incredibly high OCD type symptoms that came about from a really poor transition into high school. However, he can code. He's 13 years old and he can code. And he also has really good comprehension of some really complex maths. He can do complex maths inside his head and he can code really well.
Yeah.
Yet our education system isn't fit for purpose for children.
It isn't fit for purpose, full stop, in my opinion. Yeah. I think it hasn't grown out of the industrial age, and we're not living in the industrial age anymore. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, yeah.
It's built on principles from the 50s and 60s, where people used to get qualification, go and work in a factory or go and work in a building site, get a grade, and then move on from there. It doesn't encourage free thought. It doesn't encourage creativity. And in my opinion, being sports mad, being from a performance background and being entrepreneurial, the creativity aspect for me is the most important thing. And yet you see all the arts being cut, you see all the music being cut, and you see less and less after school sports activities.
It's really poor. It's so poor. And even in terms of when we're thinking about our health and stuff like that, these are the things that we need to be encouraging. And I think we are talking about it more. You know, barriers are coming down for, you know, education, for, you know, women's health issues, women issues. But, you know, I've worked, I took some time out to have kids, but I've worked, you know, since I was 18 years old. And I'm thinking about my pension now, and I'm like, oh, okay. Well, because, like, you know, I've taken some time out to have my kids, then I've set up a business, you know, my pension isn't where I would like it to be. And, you know, I am very aware of that. Whereas my partner's pension, and I know your partner, your husband's pension, Roxy, is quite healthy, isn't it? Because they've had that opportunity to continue to top up their pension, to continue to work. Whereas, you know, at one time when I was a mother, you know, stay-at-home mum, I had no money coming into my bank account at all. I totally relied on my husband at the time, which is why it was such a massive shock when, you know, he ups and left very, like, quickly. And I had nothing coming in and a business and staff to support. But yeah, there was no money there for me to think about the future, no money there for me to think about pensions. And it's only really, and I consider myself to be in a lucky position now that I am thinking about that sort of stuff. But yeah, we could talk about this all day.
Entrepreneurs don't look towards their pensions so much then, because I'm in a similar situation. I've been very focused on building the business and everything. We've gone back into building the business, and yet as I know now, especially with the hearing and kind of needing two pairs of glasses to want to read and want to see, that age is catching up on me. So I'm very aware that my pension should be further along than what it actually is. So why do you think it is that entrepreneurs value building a business rather than building a pension?
I think we just don't have that safety net that, you know, employees have. Like, it's not a you get paid for your bum being in a seat kind of position. You know, people listening here could know that they can really graft, and they can really graft for a week and really not see a lot for that. And you know, we talked there about childcare providers being paid less than £3 an hour. I know I've been paid less than £3 an hour sometimes, and I've pulled out like 60, 70 hour work weeks. And, you know, celebrated because I've bagged 200 quid at the end of the week. But, you know, it's really about you knowing what you want. And one of the biggest pieces of advice I can give to people is pay yourself first. And then if you can, take a percentage of that and just pop it to one side, whether it's in a savings account, whether it's in, you know, I'm not here to give financial advice, but a savings account, pension, or if it's, you know, an ISA, stocks and shares, whatever it is. But, you know,
Money Box is great for that.
Yeah, we're all going to live longer. And it's about what standard of living you want when you get older. And our children as well, like, it's more and more difficult for them to get on the property ladder. It's more, you know, the likelihood is that they're going to stay at home for longer. That means your bills are going to be higher for longer. These things.
I'm just hearing pressure. Pressure.
Well, it's a good job we can manage our own time and manage our own expectations with our own
business. That's it.
One of the things that we did last year that's really helped with this is that we set up a standing order every single month inside of our business to put a percentage of our money into a business savings account. And that's there to pay for tax. And if at the end of the year when the tax is all paid, there's some money left in there, then we'll take a little bit extra, or we'll, you know, invest into something in the business.
It's very like a book called The Latte Factor. Have you ever read that?
No.
Who it's by. I listened to it on Audible. It's a really good listen. And that's very much the kind of process that they talk about. So if that's something that you listeners are interested in, then The Latte Factor is a book that I can recommend on that. So going back to when you had the bridal shop and you were starting the Wedding Business Hub, did you end up selling the bridal shop, or do you still run that together?
No, we didn't sell it. We just got rid of kind of all of the stock in it. It was kind of like an independent little shop, really. So yeah. I could have spent ages and ages trying to find the perfect buyer for it. And I think as well, I don't think I would have been able to, because it was my first proper business, I'll put in inverted commas. You know, I ran that from home, set up a shop, had quite a lot of success with that business. And I don't think I could have watched somebody come in and take. Plus, it was named after my son. So I just don't think I could have watched somebody come in and do anything else with it. And, you know, at one time, we were thinking about franchising the model. Mm-hmm. However, it's funny where life takes you, because it 100% now I look at and think I wouldn't have wanted that life, and I wouldn't have wanted that pressure. And especially when the pandemic hit, I can't imagine the stress of having not only six, you know, staff to support through a pandemic, but also having multiple locations. So I kind of, I'm really thankful that like we took the move and we were like, okay, we're going to go for it. And I actually said, I'm closing my shop, you know, we're going to do this full time. And I think my partner was like, what? Like, you're going to walk away from a business that you spent 6 years building? And I was like, yeah, I am.
In a heartbeat.
I'm jumping in 2 feet. But no, there's no way we could do both.
No.
I personally love that, because what you've shown there is one, bravery, and two, clarity on your vision. And if you hadn't have had that vision from your GPS and your vision board and your goals and everything else, you would have never been able to have made what to people on the outside might look like a crazy, what you're doing. You've got this six-figure business that you're just letting burn to the ground. Whereas you were like, no, this is going to help free up the time for me to kind of replace all of that. I'm going to have no staff to worry about. I'm going to have no stock. And yet I've replaced that income that I built with the bridal shop with this new business that serves me and my family much better. So
I think that's what it was. And also, it costs so much money to run a premises. You know, there isn't that much help out there. Yes, I would say in your first year, maybe, but once you get over that hurdle, I mean, the council were trying to give us two lots of business rates because we ended up with two front doors. Well, it wasn't my fault that we had two front doors on our shop. Like, why does that count as two sets of business rates? But apparently it did. And we constantly get visits by people trying to bill us for more things and more things. But it was costing us in the region of 10, 15 grand to stay afloat before we even, like, breathe every single month. We've got 10, 15 grand of costs coming out to pay the staff, to replace stock. And absolutely, it got to a tipping point as well. Roxy was managing the shop more and more. My biggest risk to my business was Roxy leaving, because I couldn't be in the business as much anymore because my kids needed me at home. Dad had walked out. I had no childcare. My children were very little. So it wasn't like, one of them wasn't even in school. She was 2 years old. So it just got to a place where it made sense that we could make money from our laptop. And it's not a case of, you know, sitting on a beach making money. It's not that at all.
It's like, not that Instagram life, unfortunately.
Roxy's in a shed. Like, no.
This is my office shed. It's great in here.
But having that flexibility around your family, lots of the time people replace a 9 to 5 with a 7 till midnight. And it was about having that flexibility to be able to be, you know, mums again, really.
So do you put kind of time boundaries in then to make sure that you're not doing 7 till midnight? Because as ambitious business owners, it's very easy to go, right, okay, on my to-do list this week, I want to crack on with this. And I'm really focused on that. And before you know it, you're kind of working into what I'd call family time or me time.
Yeah.
So how do you guys put boundaries in?
Now, don't get me wrong, you know, when we're a little bit busier or we've got really important things to do, the laptop might come out in the evening, but where we can, we don't work evenings, do we? We don't book, we try not to book anything in the evenings or the weekends, actually. And we just are really strict about that. Like I say, sometimes, you know, the odd thing has to be done, but the time that you get with your children is the most precious time ever. Like, what was the stat that you told me, Kate? It was like, when they're new home.
Yeah. It's like this thing about you get 18 summers, and when your kids leave home, I'm around 18, probably not going to be 18, but then for the rest of their life, you spend 1 year with them, all the equivalent of the time, and that's ridiculous. And although, yes, Roxy's saying your time with your kids is precious, we're not going to sit here, especially with women and children with SEND needs, we're not going to sit here and say we don't want to throttle our kids sometimes and we are exhausted. And, you know, even today I'm exhausted because my son wanted to come and have a chat with me at whatever time it was last night. And, you know, some of the time we just have to, okay, this is kicking off or that's happening, and we have to walk away from work. It's not rosy all of the time. However, I very much remember, Mum, why are you on your phone all the time? Mum, you're always on your phone. And yeah, I didn't like that feeling at all. So now I tried to put it away. Actually, it's a little bit even earlier for me because my daughter comes home and she confiscates my phone to be on it. So it's probably from about 3 o'clock I'm a bit unavailable, and I'll check my emails again at about 5 or 6. But we don't put calls in on evenings, do we, Roxy, at all?
No.
We don't work weekends unless we want to.
Yeah.
And that's the thing as well. It's about having choice. And, you know, we can sit and say, this works for us, and it may not work for other people.
Yeah.
You know, other people might find that they're highly productive at, like, 10 o'clock at night. Whatever works for you, we're not here to say this is the way you have to do it. But what we are here to say is, do not burn yourself out creating something that you're not going to be able to enjoy, nor let your children grow up and think, you know, what did I do that for? Like, my dad worked, had an office, never saw him, he worked all the hours, and his businesses never even worked and weren't successful. We never saw any of that money, and he worked and, well, apparently, worked and worked and worked, and we never saw any of it, and we never spent any time with him, and we always, you know, it was always a struggle. And I think it's really having that motivation, like, what are you doing it for? And if your answer is to be around your children more or to have flexibility at home, you make sure you have flexibility at home.
And I think as well, one thing that I just thought of then was, if you're having time away from your business to be with your children, do it guilt-free. Because how many of us are all nodding, you know, when we are with our children, out for the day, sat watching a film, how many of us are actually present and in that moment without feeling like that pull of, oh my God, I need to be doing this, I need to be doing that. It can wait. It can wait.
Yeah, I had Andy Ryer on the podcast a few weeks back, and he was talking about how he learned the lesson of, he was just sending that one more email,
mm-hmm.
and he was with his kids, and his daughter said, Dad, put your phone away, stop sending emails. And he had to be told off by his daughter to get the lesson and to learn that. So speaking of lessons, what's the best lessons that you ladies have learned from your kids?
From my kids?
I think actually it would probably be to be unique. Our kids are, the boys especially, the boys are the ones with the additional needs, are very unique, aren't they, Roxy? Yeah. They lean into their superpowers, they lean into their individuality, and to just praise that, really, it's dull to be boring. And actually as well, and I don't know if I learned this from my children or it's just something that, you know, we do say and always have said, you know, mistakes, you know, are there to be learned from. Like, if you don't make mistakes, you're not learning. And I think that's just a nice lesson to have anyway, and a nice way to parent, I think, is in that we don't expect perfection all of the time.
No.
I'm not perfect all of the time, for sure. So why would I expect my kids to be perfect? And, you know, mistakes are just an opportunity to learn. So I will say to my children quite often, well, what could we do better next time? Or what will we do differently next time? And that's a culture that we had in the bridal shop as well, wasn't it, Roxy? Like that we don't make mistakes here. We learn. Yeah. So make mistakes fast, learn, and be unique and lean into it. Like boring is boring. Being the same as everyone else is boring.
Yeah, I had my son come up to me in the middle of a football match once while I was watching my other son, and one of the parents said to him, how'd you get on today? And they lost. I think they got beat 5-2 or something. He said, it's okay. We either win or we learn.
Yeah,
I love that.
7 years old, he's got that. And that's kind of one of my proudest parenting moments, I think.
Yeah, I think for me, kind of falls into what you two have just said, that it's okay not to have it all figured out. Like when I look at each one of my three children, like my daughter is massively into cheerleading, and that is a hard sport to partake in. Like there is a lot of body conditioning, a lot of training. She's the henchiest 10-year-old that I know. But you know, they have to learn how to do like flips and all of these things that, you know, she's doing 100 flips and she's landing one of them, but she's doing it again and again and again. And it is okay if you don't have it all figured out. Like my son with additional need, yes, you know, he's amazing at mechanics, electronics, woodwork, all that side of things, but he knows he's not very good at the academics. He's not bothered about that anymore because he knows it, that's okay, that is all right. And my oldest son Ethan is going to be a farmer. We're not from a farming family at all, but again, that's okay that's not all figured out, because it comes with learning, with that passion, with that motivation of putting one foot in front of the other.
I think my son said this to me, actually. He said that he, for a long time, he wanted to be a vet, or so he told everybody. And he said, oh, I didn't actually want to be a vet, but you constantly get asked what you want to be. And I would say a vet just to shut everyone up. And I thought, yeah, you know what? Like, fair play. Because why do you need to know that when you're 4 and 7 and 11? And, you know, a lot of our job now, social media, marketing online, TikTok videos, YouTube videos, this didn't exist when I was in school. And, you know, you are conditioned and programmed to be, you know, let's get you in careers advice when you're 12 years old. What do you want to do? Where are you headed? Let's put you on that path. And I was really academic and studious at school, so I was pushed down a university route. No point am I going to push my kids down a university route. Like, find your feet, quit, fail.
The happy route is the route that we're going for.
Yeah.
You come home, start again 150 times, like, get back up. And the pressure needs to be removed. The amount of pressure that is on is insane. So insane. It's not like it was when we were at school at all.
Yeah.
And that needs removing.
100%. Well, we're coming towards the end of the pod, and I just want to ask a few quick fire questions, if I may. Yeah. So what are the three key behaviours you would like to install into people?
Kindness. kindness, understanding, and... Oh, that's hard.
Self-belief.
Yeah, self-belief is quite nice. I think, yeah, kindness, understanding, and then maybe knowing that your circumstances don't need to define you. I see a lot of that. Like, you know, a lot of people carrying things that they don't need to carry.
Yeah. Yeah. What was the first record you ever bought?
Billy Piper.
I think mine was just the song.
Definitely like a Billy Piper CD.
Was it Because We Want To?
Yes, it was.
There you go.
Yes.
Oh, God, that's a pedal day. Mine was Justin Timberlake, but I can't remember what it was.
Oh, I used to fancy him so bad when I was a teenager. He was my crush.
What's the most memorable place you've ever visited?
Memorable?
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed going to Santorini in Greece. I
was just going to say Santorini. That's where I went on my honeymoon. It's so beautiful.
Excuse me.
Yeah, I think so. yeah, Santorini, Greece is beautiful. Yeah.
Nice. We talk a lot about learning and books throughout the podcast. So what are the top three books that you ladies would recommend?
Oh, wow.
Atomic Habits. Don't know. Is it James?
James Clear, I think.
James Clear. Yeah. Profit First.
Yeah. And Why Has No One Told Me This Before?
Yes.
Who's that one by?
Is that... Have you got it behind you, Roxy? Is it Nor... It's not Nor Hilda, is it? It's not that one. We'll get it to you, Jamie. We'll tell
okay.
you.
It is Dr. Julie Smith.
Thank you very much. So, and one last question. Where can people find you?
Okay, so you can find us on Facebook. We've got a large community of wedding professionals. So if you've got a creative business, wedding business, you can come and find us at the Wedding Business Hub. We're on Instagram. You can come and find us on YouTube as well. Just search for the Wedding Business Hub. If you would like us to, Jamie, we've got a freebie that we can give your audience. So we've popped together a guide on how to make more in 2024, so we'll send you a little link and then that'll just sign you up to our email list as well, so you can get it's like a 32 page guide on quite a lot of the stuff we've covered today, actually, on how to get really clear on your goals, limiting beliefs, looking at things in a different way. So we'll give that to your audience as well for you, Jamie.
Lovely, thank you very much for that. We'll put that in the show notes. Roxy and Katie, thank you very much for joining me today on Tales of a Power Entrepreneur. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. And thank you for your time.
Thank you for having us.
No worries.
Bye.
Bye.